Yes, welcome back to the Artist Coaching Podcast with this week. Oh, I forgot to put out notifications. With this week, we've got two J's.
The more J's, the better.
Yeah, it's in the Netherlands, we have a band, right? The two J's? Or the three J's?
Three J's even.
Yeah, three J's. This week, we have Jay Hardway back to it. Welcome. And, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest, The Him.
What's up, guys? What's up?
Welcome.
Glad to be
Your
here.
Your real name is Jeroen, right?
It is, yeah. But I think probably like the other Jay in this room, we gave up on using our Dutch name around the world because it's just too hard to pronounce.
Yeah.
I do use mine always, but then they look so weird at me when I say I'm Jopke.
Yeah.
I'm like instantly say, but you can say Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a struggle. Jopke, probably in the States, like Jopke.
Jopke. So.
And Jeroen is terrible in
it's definite. Just the R. Like I even introduce myself as Jay in other situations now too.
Yeah.
When I meet international people, I've like completely given up on it.
Okay, nice. Full transparency, I didn't have a clue who you were before Jay came to me like, hey, maybe we can invite him for this time. But I started digging into you and I was pretty impressed. I just wrote down a few numbers. Just by looking at your top 10 on Spotify, you're well over 100 million streams. Well over, I'm not sure what the total is because I can't see the rest, but
yeah,
probably a
lot
more.
I think it's already like half a billion. I was doing a count for like for another thing I wanted to have in my bio, I think, or something. And it is around half a billion. It's crazy.
That's sick. How many years?
I want to say something like 10 or something.
Sick.
Yeah. I mean, a similar time frame to when Jopke started, I'd say.
Nice.
Yeah.
Roughly 750,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, so just Spotify alone.
Yeah.
And recently launched your own plugin, which we will talk about as well.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting. What's your let's first start at the beginning. Like, how did you end up in this whole music industry thing?
Whoa. So yeah, funny enough, like I'm a little bit older than Jopke. I came to it from a totally different angle. Like I had a totally different trajectory in life. I was studying artificial intelligence, kind of like a computer science thing, and I was not
back
set
then,
out to be in
back then already, like 10 years ago.
Yeah, oh, but shit. That was when AI wasn't cool. This was when
exactly.
AI was very
like nerd AI.
Exactly, like nerd
that's
AI.
Really
it was
really early to
really
be
early, yeah. Incredibly that, yeah. Boring. And so I was bored with it. I was making music on the side, and then I randomly, like, it was a hobby, and then I met this guy who was studying for music in Rotterdam. I was like, shit, man, I want to do that. Can we curse?
Always.
Yeah, okay. So as much as possible. So I did this studies, music production, and yeah, from that I started producing for some other people. I did some side gigs, started like doing all sorts of things, and then slowly The Him got started back in the day together with my partner Steven, and we did lots of remixes and lots of bootlegs, and that turned into releases and into touring, and yeah, you know, like a whole crazy wild ride that you guys probably know how it goes. You know, like you start in your bedroom and it ends up way out of hand all over the world. So yeah, that was really, really cool. And then lately, like getting into the plugins thing, like I kind of decided like, hey, I want to do more than just make music. And I had this background in computer programming. I've always been like a super massive geek and always been kind of playing with stuff in music, but never really as serious to make a product. And then like about a year ago, it's like, yeah, this is really something I want to get serious about. And then I started working on some things. And the first one, Sub Ninja, like a scope tool for your bass, is just out.
And did that start from like, let's say, a self-fulfilling prophecy, as in?
I think it's good to know, like, Jeroen, what do you work in again? What program? That's already tells you how much
Reaper.
Of a...
Nobody
Reaper?
Knows it. Yeah, Reaper. See, this is the look
what
I always get.
It's Reaper.
Yeah, it's like nobody knows it. I was recently looking at, like, for my plugin, at what the percentages are in most used DAWs. And I think, like, I don't know, like the top four or five or something is like Fruity, Cubase, Ableton,
Logic.
Logic, yeah. Yeah, I think Logic probably. And I was trying to discern where Reaper was in this list, and it's like nothing, like not even 1% or something. So nobody uses it. But Reaper,
Reaper sounds like the back end of Logic or something.
It is. It's kind of the back end. The cool thing is, so like it's highly customizable, but you have to be an extreme geek to really get into it because you just can set up so many things. Like there are so many options. I did a track with Mike Williams, and we were loading like stems, and he was, oh shit, I gotta cut all these fucking silences out, and like a really annoying chore. And then I like later I was back in my own studio and I sent him a video because like in Reaper that's just one action, like strip silence, maybe Logic does this too, I don't know, but like all those kind of smart things are always built in and you can customize everything you want. So yeah, I'm a geek.
It sounds like do you know Reactor?
It sounds like that, but it's not like Reactor at all.
Okay, because I'm old enough to have played around with that back then. Like you need to connect cables on the back end digitally and stuff. Like
it looks like Logic. It's kind of like Logic and Cubase. It's the same as that.
If FL Studio is iPhone or Apple, then I think Reaper must be Android. Then you can like customize and write your own like scripts for certain actions.
Oh, sick!
Yeah, exactly.
You I've never heard of it before. Yeah. Like never. I've been in this industry for quite some time.
Yeah, but I highly recommend it because it's like it's widely known as one of the fastest, most stable DAWs out there. But it's just not so like out of the box. It doesn't look as pretty, and you got to set up some stuff. And
yeah,
they have a marketing problem, but I think they're happy with it.
Interesting. I'll check it out. You mentioned like that you were doing this with a friend of yours, right?
The him?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, but I've been doing it alone now for the last 3 years or so, I think.
Oh, you guys split up?
Yeah.
Like the Backstreet Boys?
Like the Backstreet Boys, yeah.
And is the reason well known or is it like a secret?
It's not a secret. I think we just both wanted different things and wanted to go in different directions. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to continue with the him, and I'm super happy that I can.
What is the project, the him, if you think about that, like what does that stand for you?
I think like music wise, it's like emotional kind of dance music, you know, combined with pop music. Like it's often a lot of like vocal tracks that have a little bit of a pop feeling. It started in deep house, but it has since then evolved into many more like electronic genres. But for me, it always has a little bit of a like an emotional, euphoric kind of feel, like a little bit organic here and there. Something like that. But I like the saying whenever people ask questions like that, it's like, there's this saying that goes like, talking about music is like dancing about architecture. I mean, it's so hard to describe what the music is, you know, like it really, the words don't really do it justice. If you want to know what it is, you're really going to have to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it sounds like, what did it sound like? Yeah, I'm not even going to try. Like dance music, EDM, whatever you want to
call
it.
Yeah, maybe.
And has it always been like that or did it evolve into this sound?
It's gone all over the place, man. I think, funny enough, like my most popular track on Spotify, if that means anything, is like a future bass track I did like when future bass was really big, and I just made it because I thought it was cool, you know, like I just liked it, I was inspired. But it's very different from other tracks that people might know the him for, and there was a time when I really struggled with that and was like, oh shit, like this is not that style, that's not this style. And but now I'm just like, man, I'm a creator. I make stuff, you know, I make music and it's different and it might be different things all over the place. But yeah, it's not for me to decide. You know, how do you guys deal with that? Like, also made different things, right?
I have a little bit of the same where I'm like, I'm not sure if I make one style, and I never really felt like I made one style. So then it is harder maybe for for fans to know what you're about if they just encounter you. But I feel like the people that have followed me for a long time that still follow me now and like reply like, oh, I love your track from 2015 or something, they know kind of what I'm about musically as well. But it's not like you can, with me at least, you can't say like, oh, this is what I make.
Yeah.
So, but you have to kind of know it and follow someone for a long time. And I think that's a big difference with huge artists like, let's say, Fisher. You can probably say tech house is his main genre. He blew up with one track, and it's kind of like all that really like specific genre. I think that that's just the difference between several artists. Because if you look at Martin Garrix, he's like also does a lot of different stuff. So he's not per se known for one style. He's known as Martin Garrix. So, but you kind of have to know where he came from. So
yeah, the trend you see normally with artists is that in the early stages of their career, so let's say the up range to their success, there they have like a consistent line of genre and they put out the same kind of music every time, which makes them consistent in their music, which makes it easy to understand for people what they're all about and what they can expect. And then once they hit a certain level of success, so let's say Martin Garrix in example, then you see certain artists deciding on experimenting with different genres. Because they already have the audience, they already have the reach, now they can start experimenting with other stuff. But it's harder for artists to do that in the early stages because it's hard to build an audience if you're not consistent.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, like electronic music production, the thing that we do is also like, it's not that old of a craft yet, you know, like the possibility to make everything has only been there for what, like 10, 15 years, a little bit more, but
yeah,
that it was like so doable that you could go so wide range. And yeah, I think we're just kind of still discovering what that means. Like what is it that we add to a sound or to a song, or, you know, cause like I've had people tell me like, yeah, I can definitely hear this as the hymn track. And I'm just like, well, I thought it was completely different. So, I mean, who knows, you know, like who knows exactly what it is that we do there. And this is just an art form that's still kind of growing into its own shape.
Yeah,
and
it is. I also always wonder what, like, was I more creative when I didn't have all these samples? Was I more creative when I searched days for a kick or made a kick? Was I more creative, or am I making more songs now? Or it's always a weird thing to me that I feel like if I go back and listen to the stuff I made, like let's say 15 years ago, there's so many ideas, and I'm thinking like, wait, I didn't have that plugin, I didn't have that plugin, I didn't have that, those presets, those samples. So it's also like, it's a lot of it is also in your head. And then what kind of genre you are comes from your head. But then again, if the technology improves or changes, so do you. So I think that's what also part of what Jeroen is saying is like, we're kind of dependent or linked to the progress of technology there.
Yeah, it is. Because if you look at the AI search of the last, let's say, year, that already has a big impact on how music is being made. And I think we've just seen like the first 1% of what's coming next. So all technology definitely impacts the way how you can make music. I think what also changed a lot of things for artists in the past 10 years is the abundance of choice. As in, as Jay said, like 10, 15 years ago, you needed to buy sample packs for pretty big amounts of money.
Or
or download them.
Pirate.
LimeWire.
Yeah. I always bought everything.
Right. Back in the days, you were really, you didn't have that many samples. So you really had to be picky about like, which samples am I going to use? Or maybe I have to make my own samples, like layer certain kicks to make one new kick. And now it's just opening up Splice, kick, and there's a zillion kicks out there that you can choose from. And what I notice with some artists is that like they just freeze because of the choices they have to make. There's too much choice.
Yeah.
And that causes them to, the perfectionism the perfectionist in them is like on steroids these days, because it's never finished. You know, there's always a new option. There's always a new shiny element.
It can really ruin ideas.
Yeah.
It can really ruin ideas, because sometimes I make like a basic arrangement of a song and I really feel the vibe. And then I'm like, go in like the day after and I'm like, okay, this kick needs to sound more like an Eric Pritz kick or something. And then I go and try to change it. And then, oh, but then the bass. And then you end up like destroying your idea because there's something, there's a reason why that kick works with that bass. And that's why you vibe to it. That's why you liked it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what then gets destroyed. So it's also that's what you also, instead of freezing, you can also just destroy your ideas. And then you show it to someone and they don't feel at all what you felt with the first version. And
yeah.
That's also tricky.
Jeroen, I wonder, in all those years of making music, well, two questions. Let's start with the one. Which step was the most important one in your career that kind of gave you the biggest boost?
I think it's a good question, a hard one. I mean, I really strongly believe that there are multiple steps at different stages. I think everybody has, I mean, like any advice that I'm going to give you right now is really dependent on where you're standing, you know, like what rung of the leather are you on? Like, are you a beginner? Like when I was a beginner, one of the most important things I did was like finishing tracks. Like, what the hell, you know, like you can have a million ideas, but if you don't finish a track, then you have nothing. Mm-hmm. And actually getting that skill of being able to have an idea and finish it was one of the most important things I could have ever done.
Came that natural to you, or was that something you need to force yourself into?
Oh yeah, I definitely forced myself through that. Mm-hmm. I think any creative will know moments where they had to like kick themselves in the butt a little bit to go through that little threshold, right? Like, do you have that too?
Yeah.
Well, it came pretty natural to me to finish songs. And I, looking back, like in hindsight, I guess that was one of my superpowers, that I was everything but a perfectionist. Because what I see now with most artists is that the perfectionism holds them from actually finishing songs. And I never really struggled with that in some kind of way. But I just realized it afterwards that it was a superpower.
Yeah.
I always had it with certain tracks that I was like, and mostly when I went to play them out, that's a really good like stick behind the door. Really good thing to if you
it's a Dutch saying for those who are not Dutch.
There's probably some other saying in English for it, but if I had a gig and I wanted to play something out, that for me was like one of the main things, what I would finish stuff for, or at least make a playable arrangement. Once you have a playable arrangement, you play it in your set and you're like, hey, wait a minute, this buildup needs more of this or less that. That, I think, for me made a huge difference, because to everybody listening that has a song and like, yeah, one day I will finish this, that's never going to happen. It's either now or never. And it sounds really depressing, but I've had this like with a lot of projects and also like, oh, one day I will make music for movies. And now I kind of realize that's not going to happen unless I think I am going to make music for movies. I know it's like, and life seems so long when you're just turned 20 or 18 and you think like, I have all the time in the world to finish that project and to work on that. And then all of a sudden you're 30 and all the kids say you're old.
This sounds really depressing.
But then you realize like how time kind of works, and that it's less, if it's like, oh, one day I will do that. No, that doesn't exist. It's either you do something or you don't. That realization helps me now as well to be like, I have to finish this track that I love right now. Because next week I lost it. So
yeah
maybe that's
I recognize
good depressing tip for if you're just starting out or
No, but the takeaway from this, what you're saying, like the positive part of that is like, give yourself deadlines, you know, like you did it by playing them out in your set. You can do it by saying, I'm gonna finish a song every day or every week or every month, I don't care, but give yourself a deadline and stick to it. You know, because that is the thing, like the time is not endless. So if that's your perspective, then you're going to finish nothing. And that's going to be the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. True.
And it's funny, I've did this also for I made up side projects where I was like, I want to finish songs that are not really Jay Hardway. If I then I plan like, okay, I'm gonna release a song, and then you like plan it, so then you finish it, and even if it gets only 1,000 streams, I don't care. But I that finishing, I think that's really satisfying to finish something you've worked on, and sometimes you need like have an alias name or some kind of release you've scheduled. I do this with like lo-fi hip-hop as well. Tom and James, friends of mine, have a label for that, and they said to me, hey, just make a few lo-fi hip-hop beats. And I was already always doing that, but never like a full like 2 minutes, let's say, beat. And then they said, hey, we can do a release if you end of the week have something finished. And then all of a sudden you finish stuff and you make new stuff. You get excited again. So just plan a release. On maybe if you don't want to ruin your stage name, just make a new alias and say to yourself, next week Friday, I'm going to put my new track online under that alias.
Yeah,
you will finish something. Yeah,
true.
Very important.
Very true.
And there's a lot of like what you see with releasing a track and actually like finishing a track to start off with, kind of starts this whole positive feedback thing, because
the self-release.
Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you. You probably haven't heard the episode with Danik last week, right?
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
No, and Danik started talking about self-leasing, and I just couldn't help myself. He just didn't know about like the pun we always.
Yeah, we have very childish humor on this, and then we talk in the music industry about a self-release being like you release a track independently, but a self-release, of course. You know also what it could also mean, sexually. So,
oh shit!
So every time now he was talking about when the release and then when you're finishing, and then it's like, and then that laugh starts creeping in, and it's like, you know, in the classroom when you have to be quiet, and then the teacher gets more angry, and it's harder and harder to control your laugh. It's the same when it comes to recording podcasts.
That's the exact same. Exactly. Yeah.
So sorry about that.
Oh, good. No worries.
Nice, nice.
Jeroen, you mentioned quitting, or not necessarily quitting, but like splitting up with your partner. Did you always make music together as well, and did shows together?
We did the shows together, but I was mostly the one making music.
And you did the shows together.
Yeah.
Okay. How is it now for you to do it on your own? Is there a big difference?
It takes some getting used to, I think. So this thing happened during COVID, so like there's also just less shows now than there was pre-COVID, so that makes it a bit easier, but yeah, it's different, but everything has its ups and downs.
Yeah, I can imagine. But I always wondered, like, I was on the other side, as in I always played myself, and I always wondered, like, would it have been easier or maybe even more efficient or more big or successful if I was a duo? Because if I look at Bajax, for example, like Ralph and Marlon, how they divided the tasks, you could say, it's really efficient and it works for both persons. Yeah. And I think being a producer is also a whole different skill set than being a DJ. You know, a good DJ doesn't necessarily have to be a good producer. And vice versa. So I always thought, like, maybe it would be, at least for me, it would have been great to have like a partner who did like, well, I actually enjoyed both things as making music and DJing, but like doing it together, because once I did Collapse in the studio, I just noticed that it was much more easier in the studio with two persons.
I mean, everything has pluses and minuses, you know. Like at the end of the day, there's different types of people. There's people that who love to produce that don't like to be on stage. I think actually Jopke and me are more the people that love being in the studio, but we also really love being on stage. Am I correct, Jopke?
Yeah, for sure.
So like I love DJing as well, and for me it really goes together, but yeah, it can be really nice to work with a partner that, you know, you can share the burden with or divide loads. And there's many ways to roam. So like there's many ways that this thing can work. I can't say that what works for you works for me or the other way around. Why is this a pun too on this podcast?
Joey starts laughing that hard. I just collapsed.
Yeah, I just thought that Jay was laughing as well at the same words. But,
well,
yeah.
Well, what's the pun with many ways to roam?
Like divide loads.
I didn't even hear that. I was just thinking like, I thought that Joey was laughing because many ways to roam, like the Dutch saying made in English, but I don't know if it's also
English. It's also an English. Yeah, no, it was a dirty one. anyway, how about content? Because
are you content?
When I quit DJing about 10 years ago, content kind of got started. You know, it was a late Facebook era, early Instagram era. And I can confidently say that most of my career has been built because of content, or at least social media, you could say. How has that impacted your career? And do you like creating content?
I mean, the whole fucking word already gets me annoyed. Like, what the fuck is content? It sounds like, you know, if you can't give it a name because it's a piece of music or a piece of art or a film or like something real, then it's content. Like, what the hell is content?
Videos, photos, written words.
I mean, but so like it's not good enough to be a poem, so it's content?
Kind of.
Poem is also kind of content.
No, it's a poem.
Yeah, but it's also content. People can consume
it. What do I think of content? I think it's like, I'm going to sound like an old guy complaining about how things are these days. And I get that. But I feel like a lot of content, with quotation marks, is just like cheap, easy, digestible crap that people scroll through on their phones while they're taking a shit. And like, I do it. I have to. Like, everybody has to do it to a certain extent to like, stay relevant or something, or maybe we all feel like we should, but I did not get into this world to make content. I came into this world to make music, to make plugins now for people to use to make music or content if they want. But like, I mean, I came here to create something that's more than just scrolling on your phone, you know, like,
and how do you deal with that? Because as you mentioned, like you're poorly. Kind of, sorry,
very poorly.
Poorly, yeah.
He's about to rage quit the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck this. Let's go.
No, man. No. I'm not upset at you or at the question. I feel like, and maybe you guys can say something about this as well. But like, we're also worried about the content that, like, there was a whole while when I started making like videos for Instagram and TikTok, and that took away from time making music. So now I'm like making content. Just like as a mimic of something that I really do, you know, like it just feels a little bit weird.
No, I think the word content has just become this thing that a lot of like managers say, like, or promoters are, you need content. And it became this kind of word on its own instead of like, hey, you need just make stuff you like, make stuff, make cool music. And then if it's like, yeah, this is where I think Jeroen and I will agree. I will not make something so that I have content. I will not like, oh, I need to make a video this week because I need content on my social media. No, I will make a cool video when I feel like it, or when I've had a cool tour and I want to show that. And then, yes, then that is my content, but I will not make a video to have content. I will make a video because I think it's worth sharing with everyone. I think that's where kind of the, for artists, it's sometimes can be annoying to hear like, oh, but you need content. And artists just usually think, I just want to share cool stuff with the world. And I think that's where, it can sometimes be a bit tricky. Yeah.
No, but I definitely agree with both of you, as in, it's just that right now it's kind of the... Well, at least with the people I talk to, it's kind of the hot potato being thrown around constantly. It's everyone's annoyed by the whole content thing, you know? Like every artist is annoyed by, spending valuable hours on creating stuff that's being thrown away in milliseconds. instead of just making music, which is for life, you know, which will be there for life and which will be consumed for life. And I do agree that content can be very important for a career, because it definitely can help you to get more visibility. But I kind of also feel like we're reaching the point where artists are just really, really, really sick of it and want to get back to the core, as in I got into this industry for making music, as you said. Because in the past 5 to, let's say, 10 years, we completely diverged into being content creators over music makers. And I kind of feel like we've reached the maximum boundary, and now we feel the urge to get back to the core. And I think that's also why you reacted how you reacted, Jeroen, because it's here, you know, it's you're up, you're full of it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I think I said it all. I mean, I'm not upset at anybody making anything that entertains other people. I'm not here to tell you what you should watch or what other people should make, you know, make whatever you want. But I think it's just like a empty container word, and we're all trying to scramble to get some attention on these platforms. But like,
how do labels think about that? Because you're signed with Spinning, or
no, I'm self-releasing.
Nice.
I've got my own label, Daily Deep, and I'm releasing most of my music on there. Okay. And I'm doing some like tracks on Spinning and some stuff on Stamped, and like just
so that when you have talks with Spinning or Stamped, like or any other kind of label, doesn't necessarily matter which one, but I've heard from a lot of artists that labels are bashing a lot on the content part, like, hey, if you're going to release this song here, we do want to see a video of you doing this, or you want to get the tutorial, or like they also, aside from just giving them the song, they also request a content package, let's say. How do you respond to that in meetings like that?
I mean, I haven't had this in practice, but I mean, I'm also not oblivious to the fact that you need to promote your stuff, right? Like, if you just make music and put it on Spotify, nothing's going to happen. So, like, I just released the plugin, and I did a lot of work on making sure that this gets out into the world. And I also made videos. Like, I made a long form video talking about how the thing works, and then I made a shorter version for the same thing, but then for people who want it short. And then I cut like that in small bits to throw on Instagram and on TikTok and stuff like that. So like, I am definitely also doing that. Like, it's a way of marketing what you're doing, but it's not my goal to make content. Like, for me, social media is like a way to talk to people, and unfortunately sometimes that's only in short form, and you got to use that for what it is. But I don't want to spend my days thinking about what the next thing in my social media output platform is going to be, because that makes me miserable. And I don't know how that is for you guys, but
I think also that's interesting, because I think social media and the goal of social media changed a lot, in my opinion. Also for me, like, I used to spend when Facebook was quite new, kids, we are old. Yes. We actually
Facebook turned 20 last week.
Yeah. Wow. We noticed almost the birth of Facebook. We were alive back then. No, but like, then I really found it enjoyable to see what friends were doing. And like, I would post something, hey, I'm having a barbecue. And then this other friend was like, oh man, I'm also coming to your place. And then, you know, like, you would meet up, and it was very interesting. And then I became an artist. And then people wanted to see what I was doing, which was like, whoa, this is very cool. And then exactly like the right timing for me, where people wanted to see what I was doing, and I was doing something very cool. So I attract a lot of followers really quickly. And then I think now social media has become, instead of like, I want to see what people are doing, is I want to be entertained and kind of like mindless. It's kind of like mindless entertainment. I noticed for myself, I really like browsing TikTok, and I can really spend way too much time, because I'm really entertained by all the videos that are on there. But I hardly ever think like, oh, I want to follow this person, or, whoa, this person makes that amazing cake.
But Jobke, do you ever leave it like satisfied? Like, after you go on your TikTok bout, do you ever come off it feeling like, oh, I really consumed something?
I think, this is my personal opinion, I think TikTok is, and I don't have shares in TikTok, I think TikTok is really good at nailing what you like to see and keep it like entertaining. So it's like it's where Facebook kind of digressed into like where you go down this political rabbit hole. I think TikTok is way better at navigating your, yeah, probably like your watch time and what you like and what you don't like. You don't even have to like certain videos to give the algorithm that information. It kind of can tell from the way you're scrolling. But I can really like sometimes, and I have to not be mindless scrolling. I really have to say to myself, no, you know what? I have 15 minutes. I'm going to scroll on TikTok. And I can really be like enjoying myself for 15 minutes. Nice. It's like going on Netflix or whatever.
Yeah, just it's replacing the...
It's entertainment, and I'm not at all interested in following someone. Maybe when... almost never. I really have to... And that's, I think, is probably the difference where first social media was like, I want to follow certain people because they do cool things. Now it's just like, I want to be entertained and I don't give a shit how.
Yeah.
Bring me entertainment. And that makes it, I think, also way harder as an artist to get people to like actively follow you. So that, I think that changed a lot.
But the same thing already happens on Spotify, for example, too, you know, like... Mm. Where you just, I listen to loads of playlists and I love the music, but I might not even know who I'm listening to.
Yeah exactly. True. Yeah.
That's kind of a shame sometimes.
But I think that there's a bigger trend on top of that, because same on social media, like the whole term itself doesn't make sense anymore because it isn't social media. You know, it's like entertaining media or whatever. It's not social media. We're not talking to each other anymore because that moved to WhatsApp, for example. That's actually a social media tool. But what you do see happening, and I think Jeroen also said it, like it's cool to talk to fans, to be able to talk to fans and to communicate with them in some kind of way. And I think that's where Discord came in, like building your community in there, have a direct connection with your audience, doing live streams, chat with each other. I think that's the real value of Discord at this point. And I also think that's why that's going to become more of a bigger platform for artists in the upcoming years.
I mean, the funny thing is, like with this whole Plug and Lunge, I started the Discord channel as well, and like I've got people joining, and it's really great. Like it actually reminds me a little bit of what Jörg was just describing about Facebook, where you have a little bit of a community, which is great. But like, I guarantee you that within no time, Discord is just going to be another timeline. You know, you already have the announcement things and, you know, people are sharing. This is the same thing that happened with Facebook in the beginning. Like people are sharing their Instagram feed to their Discord with a bot. Like,
Really?
Man. I haven't seen that yet, but
let's hope
it doesn't. I think for me personally, Discord, I think is very, the platform, it's confusingly set up. What I miss in dance music is like the forums that maybe Reddit could be better at it, or but there's just it's hard to find like a really proper active group. But I miss that kind of like nerdy forums where people like had a community. Like the Vata Gonzalez forum was a real good one in Holland where Leibach you kind of knew some of the guys, and you, like one of the guys then was like a popular guy on the forum, but not because, oh, you're famous. No, he was like one of the better ones and he always shared tips and kind of that community feel. And I think Discord is just the interface. I don't really like it that much. But also what Jeroen just said, there is a lot of algorithms going on now where you're people being pulled away from servers or not notified by certain servers anymore because other servers are bigger and more important and run by companies who pay, and you have to pay to, you know, that's kind of a shame. But I think it's also inevitable when something gets so big, you know, like how many billion people use Facebook? I mean, how are you gonna keep people's attention in that app? That is very difficult.
We'll just see how it ends out, but let's hope it ends out better.
Just follow AJ Hartway on
I just want to add one like brief thing, like I just want to say, use the things that work for you and use them in the way that work for you, you know, like, because what Jupke is saying about the forums in the beginning and stuff. And like, we've had chats one-on-one about this as well, where in the beginning you have this community and you connect, and as you get busier, that's much harder to do. And it's all like normal, but find a couple of people that you click with. Doesn't matter if this is an Instagram or WhatsApp or Discord, whatever, you know. And like, in a bit, especially in the beginning, it's so nice to have a bit of community and feedback from your friends and learning with each other and from each other. Just find that wherever that is for you. And
yeah,
you know, like, yeah, if you want to make make music, you can't just be a content creator, because that's not going to be enough to make dope music.
True. What, Jeroen, was the, now looking back at those all those years, like, what was the biggest mistake you've made, or that you might even regret?
I think one of the mistakes, I wouldn't know the biggest mistakes, and I would encourage everybody to make lots of mistakes, because I think inaction is much more often a problem than making a decision and a mistake. So like, don't worry about the mistakes. I think in the beginning I was, and I might still be a little bit like that, a little bit too careful, you know, like too careful with wanting to share stuff, too careful with wanting to collaborate, too careful with, like, I recently read an email for myself from like a whole while ago. There was a, I did a remix for, The names don't matter. I did a remix, and this track got played by a big DJ on a big stage in a mashup forum. And another big DJ requested the instrumental, and I was kind of like, oh shit, you know, like, I kind of want to turn this into like an original, and like, oh, should we like give this away or not? And then we didn't give it away. And like, reading that, like, it was, I found it completely by coincidence, but reading this and seeing myself back in that mindset of like scarcity, you know, where you're like, ah, oh, you know, what if this is my good track? But I never turned it into a fucking original. No. I see on Jobke's face, like, this happened to him too, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. This is so recognizable.
You just gotta go, man. Just throw it out there. Throw it against the wall and just keep moving. It's not about this thing.
Get your good stuff out there right now. It doesn't do any good sitting on a computer.
Yeah.
This is why, like, when I met Martin Garrix, and this was way before he blew up, we were just like producers on forums making music. And like, we met each other. And what he did was, like, let's say I had like two tracks. And I had like, I was like, these are such good melodies. And they were, I mean, I really liked them a lot. And he was like, yeah, let's just use that one in the first break. And then for the other track, we use it in the second break. And I'm like, yeah, but these are two songs. He's like, doesn't matter, man. They're in the same key. Come on, just put them in one song. And he kind of, he didn't care about, you have a good idea. I was always like, oh, you want to keep it and cherish it and make it a real big release. I'm going to work towards it and talk to labels. No, just get that shit out of there. Yeah. Just release it. Just put all your good ideas in one fucking song. It doesn't matter. You'll come up with, if you had a really great idea, you can come up with another one. It's not like you have one idea, especially in music. There's so much to explore.
And even when you think you have a good idea, it still can suck. People can still think it sucks. But that's the beauty and the beast in the music industry, as in, you can't really know which song is going to be your best one. And you also can't know which is going to be your worst one. So that's why you should just release it all and see what happens, you know. But going over that hump and set away all of your fears and anxiety and like insecurities, that's kind of the hardest part for most artists.
Yeah. Like, it is for everybody. There are some people that have way less like trouble with that part of them, you know, and it's good for them. They'll probably struggle with something else, I don't know, but like, but lots of like guys like us and girls that are producers, we're like, you know, we love sitting in a room making music, and that you can be prone to overthinking it and wanting it to be perfect or too careful, and just keep going.
True. What is your plugin about? Because I saw that video you were talking about. I saw it on your Instagram where you explained it in under a minute, probably.
Yeah.
Can you explain briefly as a 5-year-old to a 5-year-old kid, like, what the fuck? What's the fuck about?
My begging you for you. Yeah, so it's called Sub Ninja. You can check out the whole video if you want at dsp.thehim.com. It's a skull plugin. It shows you the waveform of the sound that's going through it. So I'll generally have this set up on my master, and like this is literally a thing I've been using for like I want to say 10 years because I had like a small hacked version inside Reaper.
Built for yourself.
Built for myself. In Reaper, you can run your own effects, and like there's a whole bunch in there that you can super easy edit. And I just like hacked one of those things together. And I've even talked about this in the past in like in a spinning tutorial and like I don't know, 4 years ago or something. But I always wanted to make it into a plugin so everybody could use it in their project. So what it does, it shows you the waveform that you're currently listening to, and then it actually you have the option to only show the low frequencies of that waveform.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it side by side. And what this will allow you to do is basically look at the energy distribution in your bass region. And I mean, I think you guys are probably used to looking at like a spectrum analyzer, for example, mm-hmm. that's in an EQ and you see the big wave and it bounces up and down a little bit. But the resolution of that is actually quite poor. And you only see like a one frame, you know, like that moves up and down. You don't see it over time.
Yeah.
So what Sub Ninja will do, and like this is literally the second image I think on my website, is it will show you your bass amount over time. And so you will actually in one overview right away see how your kick, how your subs, how your bass is doing. And because it's a waveform, you can also see how far the waves are apart, so you can literally detect right away if a bass is really low or if it's closer together and it's slightly higher. You can just see in one instance if it's right or not. Like I don't really like I've had feedback from people saying like, oh, maybe this is too complicated, can you make it simpler, like does it work, how is it for a beginner? It's a meter. You have to learn for a minute probably how it works. Like I recommend everybody to look at some tracks that they like and see how they look on Sub Ninja.
Yeah.
But after that, it's just an instant click for most people, like, oh yeah, that's how I should be looking at my bass. And that's been the feedback I've gotten from lots of people, like even some big DJs like Hardwell, you mentioned him before, and Nicky Romero just posted an Instagram video yesterday, like saying, oh, this is fucking amazing. Because it's just so simple, but so logical that this is just the best way to look at bass.
And then the end goal of it is to mix your bass and kick tighter because you can see how they respond to each other.
Yeah. So you can just like, I mean, the goal is up to you. Like this is your music, not mine, but the goal is that you can see what the levels of your kick and bass are. So like in many small studios, in many small rooms, not optimal acoustic, not optimal speakers, it can be just really hard to hear. And it can be hard to hear bass in general. But with this, you can set the filter like around 100 hertz, kind of the sub region. And you can in an instant see, you know, are my kicks way too loud? Are they overpowering my bass? Is my bass too soft? Is the sidechain not set up right? There's some warning features in there too that'll help you a little bit with that kind of stuff. So yeah, basically the whole foundation of your track, you can just have a crystal clear image of what it's doing.
Cool. I like those easy utility plugins that are like super useful but easy to handle. I think
it's like very to me always very interesting to have something that is audio represented visually. Imagine that someone thought of that at some point when they were making software for music production, but that had like for EQing has helped me tremendously. Seeing that like waveform or however they display it, hey, there's a peak, and oh wait, that's where I hear it. And that's kind of what this plugin just goes a step further with. That it's like, hey, your bass does this on those frequencies and just separate from the track. And that's, if you're a bit more experienced with producing, is way more interesting. And I think as a beginner could be really helpful to understand why a Tiesto track works so well on the dance floor. So that's, and I think with new plugins, and I haven't tried Sub Ninja yet, but I think it's always a good idea to have the best of the best tracks. Like if I will find a track that works really well live, and then you can analyze why. Usually it's, of course, there's some kind of magic melody and a bunch of things that come together. But for electronic dance music, if the kick and the bass are really the foundation of does it pump, does it work in a live setting? So it can really help you.
True.
I think.
Yeah. And in other scenarios as well, because like they will also eat up most of the headroom and most of the energy of your track, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you really messed it up without knowing, you could like have a really soft master just because you're overpowering everything with a muddy low end. And I don't know what your journey was like for you guys, but you know, getting the bass like in a good place is a hard thing to do, man. Tough, to hear that properly, yeah. Not just the speakers, like even if you had a perfect studio, it's hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
For me, I'm not a producer that really pays a lot of attention there. I focus on melodies, on arrangement, and then I kind of know like this is what the bass should sound like and the kick. But then I usually send it off to a mixing engineer who, and I think a non-producer won't even be able to tell the difference between the two tracks, but you can just hear like, oh wait, the engineer made it way more made like the bass separate from the kick and from the rest of the track. And
yeah,
so I work in a way that, and I just finish my idea, which is already good enough to be played out, and then a mixing or mastering engineer will mix it and make it so that I really like it when I play it out live.
Nice. Is it still I noticed that it was available for free for a limited amount of time. I'm not sure if that's still the case, but
there's some so just to promote the new plugin business, I gave away a bunch of promo codes, including the HIM family, all caps, all one word. You can use it on my website, and it's 100% off till the end of February.
What's the website?
So, dsp.thehim.com.
Okay, nice. Hopefully, yeah. We'll send some people there to check it out.
I'll download it as well,
just to give it a shot. I'll curious to see how it works.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, man, for doing this. Hope you enjoyed this deep conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for those who are not familiar with this podcast yet, or who's the first time listening to this, we do have a Discord.
For those that are not familiar yet, you're not listening now, but we would tell your friends is what we should say.
Tell your friends. We do have a Discord with almost 500 people in there, so feel free to join if you're an artist and if you look for connecting with other artists from all over the world. It's the Artist Coaching Discord, which can be found in the description of this podcast. Next week we will be back with I think it's just casually Ralph and Jay again.
The good old trio. The good old self-release gang.
Exactly. Guys, thanks a lot for taking the time to do this, and thanks, have a good day.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.